Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 19th of May, 13 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock. Listening to the music of blues player Lucky Peterson coming in. He passed away Sunday at the age of 55. We'll be remembering him through his music this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's great to have you here. We have a wonderful panel. Let me introduce them to you, and then we'll get started. We also welcome your letters. We always do. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And we'd love to hear what you have to say. We just ask that your letters be short, to the point, on topic, and anything else? No, I think that's it. Makes sense. No links. That kind of stuff. Short is the real thing. Good morning and welcome, Alan Chartok. How are you?
Well, I'm just dandy. Joe, it's wonderful to be here, to be watching the beautiful colors that are coming into the Great Barrington area and everywhere else. And
spring is here.
Just fantastic to watch it all. And every once in a while, you get a little heat out of the sun, and you sit there and you just soak it up in your shoulders and your face. It's wonderful.
You know, I was just reading the Boston Globe as we were coming in, and I'm jealous because you all may be able to get a haircut next week.
Over here, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, it turns out I have a wonderful barber, Joby Ritmo, who I've used for
here in New York.
Yeah. But here we have Roselle Chartok. Who gave me, I'm sorry, Joe and everybody else, it was the best haircut I have ever had.
Well,
she's
don't
fantastic.
Advertise those services.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether I want to get a Flobee or just something to to part the hair so I can see the script. That's all I ask. But I've noticed a lot of the guys in the newsroom now are just wearing hats. That's what we're doing. It's like Ray, Ian, David, and I wearing hats. So
Ray has hair?
Now, stop.
Oh, yeah, no, he does.
Of course he does. Times Union, former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm just fine, waiting for the haircutters to get back in business also.
It'll be an exciting
maybe
day.
Maybe I'll go across the border.
Well, you know, that's what I was thinking, too. And then, it's by appointment, and I'm sure they're not going to, take the likes of us New Yorkers. But, man, it is tempting. The Empire Report's J.P. Miller joins us. Good morning, J.P. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. My wife gave me a haircut a week ago, and it's amazing.
Great. See, and this is nothing against Kelly, but she has not offered, nor have I asked her.
Yeah.
And investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo, is your hair okay, Rosemary?
Yeah, apparently I need to get a wife to get it taken care of. That's the lesson here. No, I want you all to talk fast. I need to get out to the garden. It is crying out for plants and weeding and yay.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's good garden weather. It's beautiful.
I'm home. I'm in Albany now. I was down in Virginia Beach for a long weekend for my granddaughter's 7th birthday, but I'm back now.
May I say, your granddaughter is adorable.
I know.
I know you probably wouldn't fight with that remark, but
oh my God,
quite
no,
adorable.
If somebody had said, here's a catalog, pick out the granddaughter you want, I would have picked out Gemma. So yeah, it's perfect.
Well, good morning, everyone. Let's get started. We, again, welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. I do want to obviously start probably with the WHO story, but, let's go for the low-hanging fruit first. Donald Trump says he's taking hydroxychloroquine to protect against coronavirus, dismissing safety concerns. This is an odd story. I think by any standard that you put it under, is an odd story. It's odd because why would you take it? Let's say that it was proven that it worked. Why would you take it as a preventative, number one? And number two, well, why do you take it at all? And then the fact that it's announced a week later all seems very weird. But it was announced yesterday that the president, to protect against coronavirus and dismissing safety concerns, that he is taking the drug hydroxychloroquine And despite the lack of evidence that it prevents individuals from contracting the illness and warnings from physicians that it can have deadly side effects, he said, hey, I'm in. The president said he began taking the anti-malaria drug about 10 days ago after he told the White House physician he'd like to start taking it. That timing would put the start of Trump's drug regime, regimen, at roughly the same time as the news broke that two White House staffers had tested positive for the virus, and the White House later released a letter from Trump's in-house doctor that linked his drug regimen to one of those cases. Alan, what do you think?
Well, there are a number of things that one has to really think about here about this president. He has a responsibility for leading by example. Does he wear a mask? No, doesn't wear a mask. And now he's taking a drug which we know can have serious deleterious effects on people with heart conditions, of which he is one. Now, I'll confess, Rosemary, you're much closer to all of this and watching it than I am. But I didn't know until we spoke about this yesterday that he had a heart condition. But apparently he does. And go ahead. I'm sorry, Rosemary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true.
So he has go ahead, please.
Well, I mean, you all know how I worry about the president's health, and I'm glad that he's taking all steps. I hope that he next discusses with his physician possible injections of bleach. You never know what can help. What do you have to lose?
Weird, isn't it, that it is, I don't know. There's a lot of things weird about this.
This is a leader joke. This is supposed to be a leader in this country. Now, we know that 30% of the people think that, you know, he's right about just about everything. So if just like 10% of them decide that this is a drug worth taking, and let's just say a couple of percentage of those have medical conditions like heart conditions, which his own doctors are warning against doing that, he in some ways is really guilty of leading people into death. I don't want to say the word murder, but it does cross my mind.
Well, JP, I'm interested in your take on this because I look at this and I say, all right, well, we seem to have been past it, right? We moved past hydroxychloroquine. The president had said it was a game changer, I believe is the term he used. Then a ton of evidence came out that it wasn't and that it had serious side effects. And then there were reports that came out that said it was bad. And then Fox News, even to put the cherry on top, stopped talking about it and really abruptly stopped talking about it and advancing it as a quote unquote game changer. And we're past all that. Days, boom, the president says, hey, I'm on it.
And not only that, he goes around, he shakes everybody's hand, he doesn't wear a mask. He is exactly what we don't need in terms of a leadership role.
Yeah, I didn't think it was a health tactic that he's taking. I think this is a media tactic for him. This is a classic Trump smoke bomb, which, he was telling the media was, there ready to ask questions. They had their questions written down. And then all of a sudden he drops this on them. And then, of course, they're all asking about the hydroxychloroquine. I thought it was funny last night that Speaker Pelosi said that she's worried about the health of the president because he's morbidly obese. I thought that was great.
And, what a shot! Shot that was.
And this is what people are going to be talking about for the next few days. When you're right, Joe, we thought we were past the hydroxychloroquine. This is what everybody's going to be talking about.
And Mike, to Alan's point, which is that he's a leader. And it just seems, so now what does this mean for the average primary care physician at a health clinic near you who suddenly is going to, I would assume, be not besieged maybe, but maybe of requests of people who want to start taking this drug as a preventative?
Hopefully they're better than the quack doctor we're paying for in the White House. And they're going to say, no, stupid, it doesn't work.
Mike, and then we'll go to Rosemary, I promise.
Yeah, no. She's right on there. There's no other way to describe it. I mean, this is a reckless act. And it does not just risk his own life, which it does. He's 74. He has a predisposition for heart disease. and he's overweight, morbidly overweight by many measurements. Nancy Pelosi's just quoting typical data, you know, his height, weight, et cetera. And not only does it affect him, though, people will be trying to get their doctors to let them take it. Some doctors will be persuaded by it, unfortunately, and they shouldn't, but they will. And as Alan said, people will be at risk. Some people may take this, and it may contribute to a downturn in their health. They may have heart arrhythmia, which is what Trump's own FDA had warned was the risk when you take these drugs. And now, remember when he said about the disinfectant, we had the company that makes Lysol saying, don't take that.
Right.
You know, because people were calling up and asking how to do it. So, and then the other part of this is you asked, why is he going ahead and doing this? Well, JP's right. It's a smokescreen. He doesn't have to answer questions about firing the inspector general or investigations of Saudi arms or, you know, other stuff to do with the Secretary of State. But the other reason that he's talking about it is because Rudy Giuliani is promoting it.
Do you think, and there does have to, I guess this question does have to be asked with this president, does it not, Rosemary? Do you think he's really indeed taking it?
No, I have doubts about it. The man's a showman. I mean, even snake oil salesmen in the last century, in the 19th and 20th century, did not actually take their own poison. They sold it. And I think that's what he's doing. Did you notice at the press conference, you used the passive construction, it was announced. It was Trump who trumpeted that he was taking this.
Yes.
And actually kind of chortled and said, oh, I was waiting for your reaction when I told you this. He enjoys it. I don't even think it's a distraction. He's still got the questions about Saudi arms and the inspector general. But he just loves this. And so, no, I don't know that he's taking it. I really would wonder about the medical license of someone who would prescribe it to him when the patient comes to you and say, I really want to take this, and he's fat, and he's got a possible heart condition, and he's in a position of stress like that. What doctor would say, yeah, go ahead, it'll be fine. Even if it didn't do him any good, that is a killer drug. If you've ever taken it for malaria, you know it's kind of debilitating. It's crazy.
And
we're here talking about it, so he likes that. He dominated the media circuit for the whole past day. You're right, JP. It's a media decision.
But and as I said, it was the low hanging fruit of the morning.
Sure.
Of course, the big story today is that the president is threatening to permanently cut the WHO funding, leaving and the leave body of changes are not made within 30 days. Trump said the WHO had floundered in its earliest responses to the coronavirus outbreak as he continued to attack the Global Health Agency and its chief for being too soft on China. Mike, what do you make of that?
Well, it is interesting that we're going to take a step back, further back, in leading the world fight against this coronavirus. And it's opening the way for China to dump in $2 billion, which is what President Xi is pledging. And he is using this opportunity of the U.S. withdrawal to really have much more influence over the whole world. You know, back when they had the Ebola crisis in Africa, during the Obama administration, the U.S. stepped up, sent in hundreds of millions of dollars and raised a couple billion dollars worldwide to lead the battle there. And that did contain it at that time. And that's the role the U.S. traditionally has. And we've completely walked away from it.
Alan.
I think, Mike, I agree with a lot of what you're saying. However, I do think that Trump understands the cycle of the news cycle. Rosemary's right about that. He's now in command of it, and we know that. But China's interesting. I think China's on the bad end of the stick here. In other words, I think China is getting blamed not only by Trump but a lot of people around the world the Wuhan, the concept of the Wuhan thing that was falsely forwarded by Pompeo and so many of the other Trumpsters, has taken hold in some public imagination. And I think the Chinese had to come up with that $2 billion in order to try to fight the perception that the Chinese started it all. Maybe I'm wrong.
Rosemary?
Well, I don't think it's entirely bad that there's reforms and studies going on of WHO. One, aside from whether or not they treated information from China with a special, you know, don't touch it, that they should not have. They also ignored Taiwan. That had to be at China's bidding. Taiwan has been very effective in stopping the virus in that country, and we hear very little about it. So I don't think that's bad. Funding is, he says it's permanent, but that means, you know, he could reverse it the next day, or he could be voted out of office in November, and the new president, a rational person, would put it back in. I think he's condemning Africa to, like, some really bad stuff. The virus is just beginning to hit in the really underdeveloped areas of the world. They have no public health structure. They don't have medicines. They don't have the equipment. And without the WHO in fighting strength to go in there, they're doomed. And that's what the president has done. I think China, as Mike put it very well, has been moving in this area as they have an economic development to fill the spot as world leader that the U.S. is abdicating.
We have a minute. JP.
Yeah, again, much like the hydroxychloroquine, this is a media tactic. This is an electoral tactic for Trump. Trump's been targeting China since 2016. And he, you know, all of the woes that are befalling our country because of this, he is going to simply point the finger at the World Health Organization. And there's going to be, you know, some evidence to back him up on that. And that's going to be his electoral strategy from now until November, attacking the WHO and attacking China.
Not so much with the WHO, but certainly with China. We've got an awful lot of audio and video of him praising China and President Xi. So is it effective, is my question.
Well, I don't know. I would say being anti-China is kind of his brand. And yes, yeah. Biden will try to show that he's buddied up to China and he's not as tough on them as he says he is. You know, Trump's ads already have video of Biden talking about his good relationship with China. So I think China will be a huge issue come November between Trump and Biden.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and Rosemary Armeo, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org.
Me and the blues had a long way to go. I was just a young man, I couldn't see.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And so we have a couple letters here on the hydroxychloroquine, and I'll just go through those, and then we'll move on to other topics here. Claire says, this is one of the drugs to treat lupus, a serious autoimmune disease. Lupus sufferers are having trouble obtaining the drug because of Trump's antics. Then Roseanne says, do you really believe Trump is taking the drug with all the lies he tells? Would he really be honest now? It's just another way to deflect.
We've had several of those letters.
Right.
My favorite show, for whatever it's worth, is from Dolores, who says, Trump will be just fine. You'd have to have a heart to have an irregular heartbeat.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Gene says, follow the money. I think that Trump announcing his taking of hydroxychloroquine must be tied to an investment in the drug. It seems like a marketing ploy to me. And then finally, we have this from Jeremy, who says, Trump urges people to be fearless and supports those going to bars, restaurants without masks and distancing. While he is so afraid of the virus, he takes a risky drug. Do they understand they've been conned? So that is the our listeners weighing in on that subject. Let us go to the vaccine news, which is somewhat associated to that. Moderna coronavirus vaccine trial shows promising early results. You ask, how many? Eight. The company said in a test of eight healthy volunteers found its experimental vaccine was safe and provoked a strong immune response. It is on an accelerated timetable to begin larger human trials soon.
And Joe, the market almost went on that little skimpy report, went up over 900 points.
Well, I don't understand. Yeah. We've discussed this before. I don't understand any of that. I don't understand why this little. I'm not saying it's little, but it's. The study, which has, it's early. We don't know. It's going to be a long time, and the stock market goes nuts. And meanwhile, you have. And spikes and numbers going up across the country, and that doesn't seem to affect the stock market. So I don't understand that, although the news obviously did send the company's stock soaring by more than 25%. And the stocks were also lifted by statements from the Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell that the central bank would continue to support the economy and markets and that they were hopeful for a turnaround by the end of the year. But the preliminary findings in the first eight people who each received two doses of the experimental vaccine must now be repeated in far larger tests in hundreds and then thousands of people to find out if the vaccine can work in the real world. Moderna's technology involving genetic material from the virus called mRNA is relatively new and has yet to produce any approved vaccine.
You know, one of the other things that Trump, I think, is destroying as he attacks science is medical research. It's not a delaying or bureaucratic tactic to test a drug before you use it widespread. And it's getting that reputation. He says, I've told them to hurry along. Should this really be hurried? Drugs are dangerous. We saw that with chloroquine, which turned out to have an unexpected side effect, and many people more than showed up in the early tests, where it too looked like a game changer at first. He should not be involved in this. He is not a doctor, as he keeps reminding us, and then acts as if he is.
And it is because it becomes like a race, right, and a contest, and it has a strange, well, again, a show, if you will, instead of scientists working and maybe, actually doing their jobs.
Even more sinister, it's like it's an impediment. The FDA is standing in the way of your getting this drug. No, it's actually protecting you.
Well, Rosemary's points are all very good. I don't think most Americans are going to agree that this is being rushed. I think that most Americans have now been scared to death and are saying, okay, this is really great. If we can find a vaccine, it's good. And the president will claim the credit for it. He already is. He's already saying, based on this early report, he's been leading the way in this. Whether that will help him and whether a sufficient number of people will believe that kind of garbage, I don't know.
But if you look at the stock market, one barometer, the good news, without fully understanding it, people are bolstered by this. I mean, I'm very happy to read this story. I think it's a very well-documented story in the New York Times, and it puts it in the right context. Eight people have taken it. Now they want to make it 100 and then 1,000, and they want to make sure that all different age groups can take it. And that there won't be any risk to their health. And then even then, experts are saying it's essential to develop multiple vaccines around the globe because not any single company is going to have the scalability to come up with billions of doses. And this one, it looks like you'll take it if it does work out and then have to take a booster within 4 weeks. So that doubles the amount of vaccines needed, and it's all rolling out. It's very hopeful, but it it's not going to be tomorrow. And the other thing too,
Warp speed.
Yes, I know. But the other thing is a lot of this research and a lot of this progress was already in the works before coronavirus even emerged. It was technology and genetic altering to leverage components of whatever the virus is, and now they're just attaching it to this. So this stuff was all underway. I mean, it's not like Trump says, warp speed. You know, it's like the atomic bomb, Manhattan Project or something like that. It's been underway.
You know, for what it's worth, I'm reading a novel, and I started reading it over the weekend. I'm almost done. It's by Lawrence Wright, the journalist who's written about...
Oh, yeah, he's the... Right. Predictive journalist.
He's written about Scientology, and he's written about 9/11, and Osama bin Laden, and his last book is about Texas. So this is his first novel, and it's called End of October. And I'm reading this, and it's about a pandemic. It was released, I think, in the end of March. So obviously before all of this hit. And, it's just eerie because just down to about the president, the vice president taking over and then the president getting upset and just all these kinds of things that happened. But one of the things that I read in there that I didn't know, and I was reading the novel as this was unrolling and happening as Operation Warp Speed was being, and I had forgotten about this, maybe I didn't even know about it. But the last time this was done was in 1976 when Gerald Ford was all upset about the swine flu and said that there was this mysterious new strain of swine flu, and he decided that he was going to try to move forward this this vaccine. And he brought in Jonas Salk, and he brought in Albert Sabin, and he brought off all these scientists, and then he said, well, the federal government's going to produce the vaccine, and it didn't go well. It didn't go well at all. It was complete chaos. Ford said he would be vaccinated. And then there's just chaos because what ultimately happened was the cost. There was the liability. They couldn't get enough. And then people started getting really sick. And I know I'm not pronouncing. I've heard many other many pronunciations of this. But is it Guillain-Barré syndrome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guillain-Barré, I think. But yeah.
Yes. Guillain-Barré syndrome. So the cases of that skyrocketed and are still cited today by the anti-vaccine movement as happening. So as I was reading this, I was just thinking, well, so history is going to repeat itself again. And we obviously didn't learn from that lesson. But I understand why we need, why we say we want to do this as soon as possible. But I'm struck by what, Rosemary, you said of, that it's more sinister than that of just wanting to do it quickly.
First he denigrates the difficulty and the fragility of medical research. It's very good that there's a positive result so far. That could change in the very next test, and it all goes out the window. So he's downplaying that. The other thing he's doing is he's boosting anti-vax movement, which I think is hideously dangerous. And he already has said, some people aren't going to even want the vaccine. We'll get enough because some people won't even want it. It does not work if they don't get it. That's what herd mentality is all about. You inoculate enough of the population so that the rest and all the others are protected. So he's just, his anti-science stuff is more than just ignorant. It's so dangerous.
JP?
Yeah, I think it's obviously important to take as long as we need to get the vaccine right, because when it does come out, all it's going to take is a few news stories of the potential dangers of the vaccine for people, like Rosemary said, not to take it. You know, if you look at the mortality statistics of healthy Americans under 45, that there is not a huge risk of death. And so people are going to say, what would I rather do? Be the first person to, in the first round of the vaccine, or take my chances for now and wait until there's another vaccine in another year or two that's more well refined. So that is going to be a big issue. And of course, another big question is going to be, will the vaccine be required for children to go to school? If your children, child wants to go to school, do they need to have the vaccine or not?
So Mike, JP, would you take it right now, assuming that they came along, they tested 10,000 people, they said it's safe? Would you take it?
I would. I love my flu vaccine. I'm fully up to date on my vaccines. I would definitely read up on it. I don't want to commit to doing it or not doing it. I would reserve the decision for when the time comes.
Well, I'm just asking.
I am under 40 years old, and no health conditions.
Wow, I resent that.
I would not. In contrast, I am scared by the haste with which they are doing this. As I say, I think it gives voice that should not be given to the anti-vax movement. We've seen a doctor in the White House who has said, maybe, who knows if it's true or not, but possibly a doctor in the White House who is saying to the president inappropriately, take a drug. How do I not know about whether the medical tests have any kind of integrity when there's this kind of pressure from Trump to come out with something? It does make me very suspicious, I have to say. I would not be the first in line for a shot.
No, I wouldn't either. But I don't know that I would under any circumstance. I mean, I think you want to wait. It's very much unlike, but you know,
Hold on. What about Mike? Mike, would you do it right now or no?
Not right now, but I mean, you know, I have currently, I have faith in the FDA and in the medical community, the established medical community, that if they do make it available, it will be after all kinds of testing, like you described, and if they make it available, I'd be inclined to take it. I mean, I like you, JP, I'd like to know more before I would, but one point here, though, is that the thing that's going on now is the same thing that goes on with global warming. It's attacking science. It's undermining science and sort of cherry-picking studies that are favorable and ignoring the multitude of studies that are unfavorable. And he's doing the same thing right now. You know, why can't we hurry this up? We had some good results. I'm hearing good things. I'm getting calls about, oxychloroquine and how good it is. And who's calling him? Who answers? Who does he pick up the phone to that says this to? You know, I mean, it's just undermining established procedure, established science that is proven to be just have been very, very beneficial for our society, and we're just kind of pulling it all out.
Joe, yeah. I'm with my fellow old guy, Michael. I tell you, when you take a look at the stats on how many people in this country have died from this virus, how many of us have done that, I think it's more imperative for people who are really at risk to take this thing. I know that nobody asked me, of course, I get that, but I would definitely take it.
But you would, I mean, under, like, when? Like, not now.
No, I said after they tested 10,000 people, I hope they're not lying, and they come out and they put it on the market, and they say this thing works. Now, as people have pointed out to us a number of times on this program when we talk about vaccines, that the early polio vaccines had some problems with it. And people allegedly, because I don't know anything about this, expired. So there's some real dangers connected with this.
Well, we even hear that.
It was interesting that Lawrence O'Donnell had Jonas Salk's son, Peter, who's also a doctor now, a public health doctor. His testing, early testing of the polio vaccine was on his own children. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, we were very late for break, but I just, you think even on the flu vaccine that they wait sort of for one round and see how it goes, because sometimes they'll either take it off in something like this, that to Rosemary's point of it being, if it is rushed, it doesn't, you can't have, or I find it difficult to have faith in the system, that developed it, or, you know, I just think, oh, I'm going to take it and maybe I won't get the disease. But on the other hand, I may wake up and find out that I have a sixth toe. I don't know.
or a misaligned belly button.
Yeah, or something. I don't know. What's that? Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have letters, and we'll go to those and other topics. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Purple rain, purple rain, purple rain. Again, listening to music of Lucky Peterson, who passed away Sunday at the age of 55. We have our playlist posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. Welcome back to the panel. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, all assembled. We also welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Mike,
Joe,
right, yes,
Joe,
go ahead.
If I could, I'd just like to warn letter writers, and in terms of our reading the letters, that when they give us a statistic and they say, the Trump appointed this guy and he owns this many shares in the drug company that's producing this, I think we have to have you say in today's New York Times or wherever you got that, because it puts us at tremendous risk to read something that might really prove not to be so.
Right.
I'm only mentioning that because I think it's important everybody understand that.
We do have letters like this one from Mike, who says Trump blaming China and the World Health Organization is a diversion. Blaming these two organizations does not explain how Donald Trump ignored and blew off all the warning signs he had. Numerous intelligence reports in the first couple of months of the year were ignored, as were reports by Peter Navarro and HHS Secretary Alex Azar. He ignored all these warnings. For Donald, it's easier to find scapegoats than it is to look in a mirror. We also got this from Carolyn, who says, here we go again. I would wait with getting my hopes up on the new Moderna vaccine. The announcement hyping the vaccine's potential comes days after one of its directors stepped down from the board to become chief scientist for Operation Warp Speed. What a blatant conflict of interest. How much does he have to gain by rushing the vaccine through? I see the potential for another hydroxychloroquine situation in the making. And that was back to your point, Rosemary, of it's
yeah,
hard to find.
I did not know that. I did not see that story, but that's exactly what I'm talking about. Used to be able to trust. Jonas Salt was like a saint. You could trust them. And now I wonder about the integrity of the medical research bureaucracy in the federal government.
Well, it's important to point out that this guy, he left the Moderna board when he was appointed to the Trump thing. He immediately resigned, and he has pledged any profits that now happen because of his stock and his stock options in the company all be donated to, efforts to fight coronavirus. Mm-hmm. So, even these agencies and these committees that get appointed by Trump may accidentally have somebody with integrity on them, Rosemary.
So what you're saying, Mike, is not everyone's evil, because we're starting to think that.
No, I miss the kind of time when we had people like Jonas Salk, who was universally just loved and regarded. I mean, I think Anthony Fauci has a lot of that, but then as soon as his popularity was beginning to swell, then the Fox News people started attacking him and Breitbart. You can't have somebody like that now, because the voices opposing them have equal footing now because of cable news and all these right-wing websites. It's just kind of a sad time.
Well, yeah. Speaking of, Mary has a great answer of how I think I would like to answer the question that we were batting around before. Mary says, I'll take the vaccine when Dr. Fauci takes it. That's good. I'd go with that. That's good with that.
79-year-old Fauci, right?
Yes. Norm.
Who does 5 miles a day, by the way?
Walk?
Yeah, what amazing. Am I? Walk? Yeah, he walks now. He ran it, but now he walks it. Good for him. Me too.
Norm says, I agree with Rosemary. I would not take a new cure in haste. Even with 10,000 tests of a new drug, non-symptomatic people, those who take the new cure, can pass virus to people who have not. Remember, wear a mask, not so much for you, but rather for the other guy. It's going to be a long road, says Norm. Valerie says, be careful, people. Guillain-Barre syndrome is horrific. I was almost completely paralyzed and on a vent for weeks. Lucky to still be alive. Cure can be as bad as the illness or worse. Take proper time to test vaccines.
I don't think anybody on the panel was diminutizing that.
Her point was that, again, Ben, going back to the 70s, of the pushing through of a vaccine without exactly knowing what it was going to lead to. And in that case, it led to a horrible spike in cases and brought on that syndrome which is obviously still recognized today.
Thalidomide. Yeah. You have to be careful. Everything has been polluted, even the idea that the cure can't be worse than the disease. That's now under Trump has a different meaning, that obscures the important first meaning it had.
Yeah.
Well, we are 1 minute away from a break, and I would I would feel horrible without mentioning that Ken Osmond, the actor who played Eddie Haskell, passed away at the age of 76 yesterday. You know, the two-faced friend of Wally Cleaver. And
it was a syndrome, a psychology syndrome where you might have a bully at work, but then he sucks up to the bosses and gets away with it, you know, and he's an icon in our culture.
1957 to 1963 was when Leave It to Beaver ran, and of course, forever known as that role as the devilish troublemaker. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue with our panel, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo. We'll return after news with Ray Graff.
He sent me to the company doctor.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan, Mike,
hey.
JP.
Hey.
Yo.
Hey, yo. I want to just say I didn't know today was Ray's birthday.
We didn't know either until his brother posted it on Facebook.
I wouldn't say anything about his head, you know. And I wouldn't have done that. I find myself one bottle of bourbon for Raymond.
There you go. Happy birthday, Ray Graff. All right. We have a lot to talk about here, and I want to get back to subjects at hand. Who wants to talk about China? Anybody? 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 Okay. The U.S.-China feud over the coronavirus erupts at the World Health Assembly. So we've been talking about this, but I'd like to go a little bit more into it. BBC mentioned this at the top of the hour of China's president pledging $2 billion to fight the virus, a move that the United States criticizes, and that to head off scrutiny of its handling of the pandemic. And then China saying, well, look, you're just trying to cover up because you botched this effort. And President Xi saying, we have done everything in our power to support and assist countries in need. Then the president responds in a scathing letter in which he accuses the accused the WHO of an alarming dependence on China. And then it just becomes a four-page letter of an airing of the grievances against China. So I just want to get back to this idea of taking on China in the fall, in the election, and even now. And does it not expose something in doing this that there's some truth to what the President Xi is saying about the government and President Trump's failed response to the virus?
It could be that they're both right. In other words, it could be that the Chinese blew it in the beginning. There's still an awful lot of talk about that lab and what may have escaped. The Pompeo put it out there, then had to take it back and said there was no proof. But we do know that it came in large part from China. The governor claims some of it went to Europe and then over this way from there. But you know, I think both presidents may have a point here.
Rosemary,
the scientists say there's no evidence whatever that came from a lab. I tend to discount that. I also think that for China. at the very beginning, I think, did try to hide things. That certainly the doctor who was trying to expose things in the way he was shushed up and then and then ultimately had his life was sacrificed. That proved that. But are they not trying to make it up now? And is their sin any worse than what our government did? I think Trump plainly gambled back in late December, January, and February, that it would not get big and he could ride it out. I think he plainly did that. Is that not worse? What is there to investigate? I think it's really distressing that we're heading, I think the New York Times wrote about this 2 weeks ago, we're heading towards a Cold War with China in the same way that we did with Russia. Why can't the top two countries in the world work cooperatively and put together their incredible research might and resources for the good of things instead of bad? I know that's very optimistic, but this is just so destructive and unhelpful.
On that point, it's one of the reasons I wanted to come back to China was because of this one line in the New York Times story on this, where they say Mr. Trump's retreat from the global stage has created openings for China, which has been seeking to reshape multilateral institutions long dominated by Washington. To your point, Rosemary.
Yes, absolutely. We're just abdicating power to China.
Mike Spain.
Well, politically, for Trump, I think it's risky also to be so aggressively blaming China right now, because I watched a couple of the Biden ads. They're online. They're very effective. They have the dates, and they have Trump when he's saying things, and they have his video of him saying it. I think this is going to be small. I think it's got all contained. President Xi, I spoke to him, and during that period, Joe Biden was coming out and saying, we need to get CDC people on the ground in China. And they're juxtapositioning these. And Trump, even though now he's blaming China and trying to, you know, discredit China in all this, his quotes, and there were many, I think there was like six or seven good video clips of him praising China, saying China's got it under control, they're being very transparent. And I think it's just going to come back to haunt him. But you know, that's just the way it looks right now.
JP?
I agree with Mike. This election is going to be more and more about who is cozy with China and who's not cozy with China. Biden is certainly going to be attacked by Trump for having his son on the board of a Chinese private equity company as recently as April of this year. Hunter was listed as a board member there, and you can already see if you look at Biden's campaign ads, as Mike said, they're attacking Trump being too cozy with China. If you look at Trump's campaign ads, they're attacking Biden saying he's too cozy with China, and it'll be interesting to see in the debates them battle it out on this China issue. China has a very mixed reputation, obviously, with voters in the U.S., particularly blue-collar voters in the Midwest who have seen, you know, factories dry up and people say, you know, those jobs have gone to China. So it will continue to be a big issue throughout November.
And Alan, when you think of this as, I guess, a sort of larger overall question of just, it's hard to know what's going to be on the table. I mean, I agree with JP, but I do think it's hard to know what's going to be on the table for a major discussion coming down in November, because that seems so far away, and we don't even know how this election is going to be held, really.
Well, that's right. I was sitting here having a fantasy while we were having this wonderful discussion, and the fantasy involved the next debate between Trump and Joe Biden. And I'm trying to think, what would be the right move for, based on the fact that substance really isn't the issue here. Substance isn't the issue. The issue is, je ne sais quoi, you know, when he started to prance around Hillary and to walk around Hillary. Remember that?
Yeah. Stalk, I would say, but yes. Yeah.
Menacing.
Yes, menacing. Yes.
That was terrible. Yeah. So the right move, I was thinking, for Biden is to turn around to him as he comes over to his space, say, move back or I'll knock your effing block off.
Oh, all right. All right. That's
now, could he? No. But it would be the right thing to say and would send the right spirit of the thing, because I think the substance – I think the substance of the thing is not really what this is all about. It's about, you know, this guy and what he does. That's all I got to say.
It's like good social distancing.
Well, yeah.
Just get away. Please, please, please get away. Mike?
Yeah, I can imagine a debate where they're in, you know, sort of like on Maxwell Smart, where they have these tubes over them, so they're social distance.
Cone of silence.
And then I also, by Alan's description, what if Biden kind of like raised his fist to Trump if Trump came too close during a debate? The Secret Service would probably pounce on him and take him to the ground.
I doubt
it's a bizarro world in which we live.
Yeah.
Don't forget that both candidates have Secret Service protection.
Well, will they even be in the same room, right? I mean, we don't even know that, really.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
We'd get it for Biden if he wasn't, I suspect.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, JP, I consider us geeky equals on this, but, you know, of the debates. But I don't see, you know, there's a really good chance where they're going to be on, you know, you'll have a moderator in their basement and two candidates, one in the White House and one in their basement in Delaware.
That's what I'm expecting, and it's going to be tremendous. Maybe they can get them together in the same room, but you know, Biden hasn't traveled, and it's tough moving a presidential candidate with Secret Service and all of the people and operations that goes with it. And you know, whose advantage is it to have an in-person debate? I would say it would be. You know, I would think it would maybe be Trump's advantage to have an in-person debate, and Biden would benefit from having it be more of an at-home setting.
But even in person, you may not have an audience.
Definitely not have an audience, no.
Yeah. I'm really less interested in the debates than I've ever been in a presidential age because of what happened last time. I think that Hillary dominated Trump. It didn't make any difference in,
you mean intellectually dominated
in the election.
Trump.
Yeah, I think.
Well, that's right. But that's why that was my point, that that's not what these debates are about.
Yeah, you're right.
We, you know, there's sometimes there's I'm fascinated by this story. But, you know, when we talk about reopening and we talk about going out and we talk about things like debates and just getting back to normal, of whether it be going to a movie theater or going to an event or whatever that will be like in the future, we really don't know. A big article in the Washington Post today that it really all comes down to bathrooms. Whether you're talking about malls or restaurants or ballparks or concerts or even drive-in movie theaters, it's the bathroom. And so the idea of, according to this article, the idea of return to life in public is unnerving enough for many people, but it turns out to be one of the biggest obstacles to dining in a restaurant, renewing a doctor's appointment, or going back to the office is the prospect of having to use a public restroom, a tight, intimate, and potentially germ-infested space. It's a hurdle vexing many business owners as they prepare to reopen in a time of social distancing, reduced capacity, and heightened anxiety about the very air that we breathe. At a Texas barbecue restaurant, they reopen only after hiring for a new job category, a bathroom monitor who assures that people waiting their turn are spaced well apart. In Florida, malls are installing touch-free sinks and hand dryers in restrooms before opening their doors. McDonald's is requiring franchises to clean bathrooms every 30 minutes. Across the country, businesses are replacing blow dryers with paper towels, decommissioning urinals that now seem too close together, and removing restroom doors to create airport-style no-touch entrances. Obviously, a lot of this is going to take time, and it's also going to take a lot of money. And there's a picture in the associated with this article of this restaurant downtown, and I believe it is in Ohio, where there's the restaurant, and then outside are just maybe 20 porta potties because nobody actually wants to go into the other restroom. Rosemary, what do you think?
Well, you know, we girls were raised to not use public toilets anyway, so I don't know that this is going to be a big difference. I think that there's no question that public buildings and structures are going to change as a result of this virus, and maybe it'll be better. I'm hoping for planes with more room, for example.
Right.
Yeah, I traveled this weekend, as you know, and I think the New York State Thruway and the Jersey Turnpike had amazing bathrooms. They were clean. There were people in there working. There's real service workers. I applaud those people who have to work to sanitize public bathrooms. It's really important and really gross work. So.
Now, did you notice, because there, again, in this article, there's pictures of maybe, say, a bay of sinks, of four of them, and then
yes,
two of them.
All, they're marked off.
Two are marked off.
Please don't use this, and it says it's for coronavirus. And the bathrooms, too, they block off every other bathroom, a stall, which I found interesting, because you would think the stall would protect people. But,
right.
And there's hand sanitizers everywhere. Definitely the blowers are everywhere. Fewer paper towels and more the high-speed blowers to dry your hand. And so it's possible you go in, and if you're not wearing a glove, you use your sleeve to open the door and then touch all the handles, and then you wash your hands with hot water and soap. There was also soap in every dispenser, which I don't think I've ever seen before. So people are definitely paying attention to that in the bathrooms. So that's my bathroom report.
Thank you, Rosemary. I appreciate it. Mike?
Yeah. No, the image of, you know, the dirty old gas station that people have, you know, public restrooms are a scary thing. You know, the airlines the airports have already, you know, covered that. You don't have to go through doors, and, you know, everything is the soap comes out without even touching anything. You put your hands under the sinks and the water comes out, stuff like that. I mean, I agree. I mean, that, already there's a surge in places that are ordering that equipment to be put into place. You know, maybe there's that porta potty solution. There is definitely an ultraviolet ray way of, you know, cleansing and killing bacteria and killing viruses. So maybe, like, you'll go into one of these little chambers, and when you come out, it'll automatically close up and lock for 20 seconds or however long it is, and then the next person who goes in, it will be completely sanitized and that kind of thing. But the thing I'm watching for is sales and coupons and marketing for Depends, you know?
Yeah.
That'll show you.
Get you through whatever you're watching for a while.
Maybe I'm missing something here. Is there anybody who thinks that the porta potties are more sanitary than the?
No, they're
gross. They're gross.
Yeah, they're gross. I mean, they are. I mean, the one thing, yes, Alan, you're absolutely right. But I think the one thing is that instead of having a lot of people, they can space them out. So you're not all going into the same room, into the bathroom, that they can place them at different. But yes, you still have those overall issues.
Well, if you know what I mean,
I think we know what you mean.
In the same room with somebody, but you certainly are.
I know.
You've got on the porta potties though. You have vents at the top, and I think people are used to using porta potties without using their hands, using your elbows or whatever you can manage.
Oh man, like a ninja.
To not touch anything.
Absolutely, but. And the idea that they would be clean, too, you know, that they would, whoever is operating them.
Yeah, right.
There was a report, again, in this very interesting Washington Post article all about bathrooms. There is this thing about Emerald Isle in North Carolina, where they're on the Outer Banks, and so they have the beach restrooms are all closed. Now, the beaches aren't open yet, but when they do reopen, so what do you do? And so then they're figuring out how they do it. They're taking bids from places to come in and clean them every 90 minutes and disinfect them every night once they reopen. But that per cleaning is somewhere in the neighborhood of $250. So are even places going to be able to do that? And I even think about this when restaurants are talking about doing a quarter of capacity. Is it worth opening the door if you're going to have a quarter of the people that you normally have?
Yeah, good question.
These are the costs. I'm wondering if the price of meals out are going to really skyrocket because of all of what you just said, you know?
It's interesting of what that future will look like, and I don't really know.
I doubt that, Mike. I doubt that. I mean, right now the name of the game for these poor restaurants, and I feel for them, I really do, is to get people in there. You know, raising the prices would certainly be counterproductive, I think, at this stage.
Why
Why is that the main thing? Maybe the business plan in the future is this fancy takeout, which many of the restaurants converted to that during the real lockdown. Has that Is that you hire fewer waiters and you have lower overhead costs, perhaps? You don't need as much
electricity. But isn't a restaurant's profit mostly based on their bar tabs? And if
Absolutely.
People are spending, you know, buying a couple of bottles of wine for a dinner party, or everyone having drinks and then having beer or wine with their dinner, I mean, that's where they really rake it in. And when, I mean, I know they're offering takeout of cocktails at a lot of places.
I
don't imagine it's happening that often that people take advantage of it. And
because
and
the liquor stores are open, and you can go in a liquor store and buy what you need.
Right. Sure.
And you're paying a lot of money for a drink in a restaurant.
Well, I just can't believe. Well,
I don't want to be like Trump. So I'll admit I'm lying about what I'm about to say. But I've been talking to a lot of people.
I get calls.
And a lot of restaurant people, and they say they're really hurting. And this is not a substitute by having we've been doing it, but picking up meals from restaurants to make it.
Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's actually working right now because it's a stopgap measure. But as you move forward, don't you think a business plan will emerge that will depend more on that, and they'll get around the liquor markup problem?
Yeah, I think so.
You're right.
Yeah. I think so. We have just about 5 minutes, and we've got a couple letters here, so let's go to those, and then we'll get to the break. Athena says, if we can defeat this impeached president and flip the Senate, especially considering the level of corruption, the numbers of powerful CEOs appointed to positions of power, the very existence of Fox News, the corrupt tax system, the sorry state of the environment, the monstrous level of cruelty, propaganda, and lies emerging from the lips and mind of the Orange Menace, the mind-boggling number of things he has done which need to be reversed. If we actually defeat this president, then my faith in democracy and the people of this country will be somewhat restored. However, my strong distrust of capitalism and my palpable fear of fascism will still endure. This is the most important election in our short history. Then, that was a lot. Then we go to Dean, who says, dear panel, sorry, but by spending so much time on Trump's hydroxychloroquine announcement, we're taking his smokescreen bait. What he wants us to ignore is the recent attack on American soil, which has been linked to Al-Qaeda. Anyone on that?
Well, that was referring to the Saudi soldier in training in Florida that shot three American servicemen, and then they shot him, and it turned out that, you know, that was being traced to Al-Qaeda. According to Barr yesterday, they said they found things on his phone that they were able to break into, and, you know, it's important to point that out, but I don't think that's a big story. We knew he was nuts and hated the U.S. when he did that, so, you know, it seems sensible.
Well, I think the bigger story is that Trump has claimed a victory over them. They're completely gone. No more Al-Qaeda. Impossible.
All gone. Peter, this letter is for you, Rosemary, and so get ready. It's not very nice. Here we go. Rosemary, now you are advocating for cooperation among superpowers? You'd be screaming collusion if that was the case. Trump cannot do anything right in your biased liberal world, and Biden can't do anything wrong. Intellectual dishonesty and hypocrisy reign supreme on the panel yet again.
Oh, crap. Biden did lots of things wrong, starting with Anita Hill. So let's get that. And he plagiarized, which I think is unforgivable. But he is better than Trump. So that intellectual hypocrisy, baloney. And the superpowers, I believe that, and I've said this, that McCain was right and Obama was wrong. Russia is the real threat, and that we should still be in a Cold War with them. China is different. China is not yet a superpower. It's certainly emerging. Soon will be. It's number two behind us. And why not avoid the same thing that we had with Russia? It's not a reset. It would be a different kind of cooperative with wariness, with controls over each other. Why don't we do that? I think that if we had a smarter leader in the White House and one in the State Department, you'd be seeing more of a a rational relationship with China rather than this crazy stuff we have now, which is, oh, I love Xi, he's my best friend, we have a love affair, and then we're in a trade war with them. And then we like what they're doing with Wuhan, and then, oh, no, it's the Wuhan virus. It's insane. So talk about intellectual hypocrisy where it really matters, not at WAMC, but in the White House.
Yeah, well, one other thing, and that is that there are two groups that are very much on my watch list right now. One of them is the Russians, obviously. You're right about that, Rosemary, because it's clear from the very beginning that Trump has been playing footsie with the Russians. No two ways about it. I love the Russians. They're wonderful. Everything they do is good. We know that his kid goes out and says, you know, we can get all the money we want from the Russians. I mean, it is beyond discussion as far as I'm concerned, and it's done. And the other, of course, is the Saudis, because, yeah. You know, this is really a terrible situation. They kill our reporter, they do all of this stuff, and they put their political enemies in jail. And now we're reading in the New York Times that they're trying to get those folks out of out of jail. And we'll have to see whether the president cooperates with that or what his interest is.
One correction I want to say to what I said. I said McCain talked about Russia's enemy. That's wrong. Of course, it was Romney who did against. And I poo-pooed it at the time, perhaps because of my liberal bias. But he was right. And I have said that since.
All right.
Romney's looking good, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Romney is looking good.
Anything on that, JP? Any thoughts? Or you've always thought he's looked pretty good, right?
You work for him.
Is JP gone? Did we lose JP?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Must be that app.
My God, we needed our Romney expert, and they're gone.
There you are.
Hey. Welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you for having me. Romney's always looked good to me. Yes.
All right.
He's a good-looking dude.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We've got everyone accounted for. No one is lost. We'll be back right after this. Well, we got a lot of letters during the break, and they're all in bathrooms, so I hope you're all ready. Good morning. Welcome back to the panel and to our discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, of course.
You know, Joe, you never know where it's going to go.
No.
That's what's so great about it.
But if you're going to go, know where you go, and let's discuss it.
Right.
Deb says, I heard an epidemiologist on a mainstream media program say he will not use public restrooms during the pandemic because virus spreads mouth to fecal matter, and it has long been established that there is a 15-foot plume of spray with every flush.
I hope no one is eating. Wait, what do you mean mouth to fecal matter? That sounds awful. What's that about?
Well, I hate that I have to spell this out, but if you're flushing, right, and then there's a 15-foot plume, and you get a droplet, right, then that could be bad.
Now I get it.
I don't know. I have to say that I did use a suggestion from a friend on my recent trip, and I wore Depends on the way down, but I couldn't do it. And I was really glad the bathrooms were clean, because that is not a way to live. We have to figure out how to stop the plume, if that's it. We have the technology for that, surely. Can't we have a warp speed fix the toilets?
Do you remember when the wasn't there
the
an
astronaut?
Yeah. And she wanted to go murder somebody, and she wore Depends, so she
wouldn't. Yeah, she had to drive all night, so she wore it. I did that, and I've worn them like when you go to protest to the Women's March, but I can't actually use them yet. You know, you're too well potty trained.
Yes, it goes against years of training.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now we know more than we ever thought we would about pluming.
More than anybody wanted.
It all depends.
Steve says, unless debt service, occupancy, insurance, utilities, and taxes are reduced, reopening even at 50% for restaurants at 50% capacity amounts to flattening the curve of insolvency, according to Steve.
Wow.
Then we go to Christopher, who Christopher says a public restroom that has a door. I'm sorry. Ray Graff is texting me, and it's making me laugh. I apologize. A public restroom that has a door that opens inward is a bad idea. How does one open the door to leave? The person before you might not have washed at all. Blow dryers are great. Yeah, for blowing viruses and the germs everywhere.
Yeah, I think that story mentioned that some are replacing blow dryers with paper towel dispensers.
Yes.
So it does kind of need to be sort of evaluated.
That's right. But what we read before was that the blow dryers were better than the paper towels. I think paper towels are terrific.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Wait, the blow dryers, you use the blow dryer after you've just washed your hands with soap and water. What viruses are you blowing around?
Well, if you haven't done Happy Birthday three times, you're screwed, right?
It's twice, I heard. But, sneeze into the blow dryer. This is getting nutty.
Well, we've certainly gotten there. Let's see. And John says, I'm reacting to the letter writer who accuses the panel of, quote, blindly supporting Biden. No. This is, again, an example of how Trump's followers project themselves onto others. Nobody who supports Biden follows him blindly and thinks he can do no wrong. That's
right.
What you Trump followers do with your dear leader. That is from John.
Right, John.
And even there, we couldn't get away from a bathroom reference. And I think that is it for the letters. Okay, so let's go to the final story of the morning. We have about 5 or 6 minutes left. As White House pushes firms to reopen, new report says much of the bailout stimulus money remains unspent. A Congressional Oversight Commission created by the CARES Act issued its first report, even though it still doesn't have a chair. President Trump on Monday intensified his push for businesses to reopen as quickly as possible, but companies and cities continued to wait for the disbursement of unspent bailout funds and remain unsure what to expect as rules and programs continue to shift. In tweets and during a meeting with restaurant executives at the White House, Trump tried to create a new sense of urgency about jumpstarting the economy, which has suffered huge losses the past several months during the coronavirus pandemic. He told restaurant executives at a White House meeting that he was open to giving businesses more flexibility in how they use taxpayer funds so they could delay rehiring workers as quickly as originally required. But while the Treasury Department has rushed to implement some stimulus programs, such as sending $1,200 checks to 140 million households and mobilizing a small business lending program, other congressionally approved assistance funds are off to a much slower start. The Congressional Oversight Commission, a new body, released a report on Monday finding that the Treasury Department had spent very little from a $500 billion fund created by the CARES Act in March to help businesses and local governments, even though many of those entities have asked for immediate help. And we should note that there is a hearing taking place right now with Steve Mnuchin and Fed Chair Jerome Powell, where senators are expected and are pressing those two about this very topic. Rosemary?
Oh, I don't want you to start with me. I'm not sure what I want to say yet.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah. Well, I would say that, you know, this was all thrown together. You know, it's a $1 trillion bill. It was thrown together pretty quickly. The infrastructure was not there. You've got a government under stress with a lot of federal workers not at their jobs but working from home. And that does make it difficult, and it's a challenge. It's a challenge anyway to come up with a good, solid, equitable plan to distribute this money and to review and accept applications. And having said that, it is May. It should be underway by now. But it just shows you that you just can't flip a switch. I mean, I don't mean to compare it. It's not directly like it, but it's like getting a vaccine. It isn't like you can just say, okay, we want a vaccine, boom. And just because you have the money behind it, it takes human beings
to set up a system that's workable. I mean, already we're, you know, over the weekend it came out that there's, you know, offshore places that are using old data stolen from people in the U.S. to apply for unemployment benefits on their behalf. And, you know, so there is going to be fraud. And this is a challenge. I'm tolerant that it wouldn't be available overnight. It is May. That was passed in March. You should start seeing money flowing, I think, by now. And it's okay to be, you know, certainly impatient about it.
JP.
Also, applying for the loans, it puts businesses in a tough position. You know, if you rewind back to, you know, 8 or 9 weeks ago when this was first rolled out, businesses were saying, okay, great. The government's putting out money. We're going to take it. It's going to help us retain our employees. And as you've seen over the last couple of weeks, there's more and more concern about fraud and abuse. And there is concern, I think, among businesses that those that took the loans will be there will be articles and it will be disclosed as to who took the loans, what they used them for. And so some businesses are saying, do we want to take these loans and these funds if it exposes us to bad PR, bad press, or puts restrictions on how we can compensate our employees, et cetera. So I agree with what Mike said. It's a tough thing. It's also a fast moving target. And some people may have thought their business was in trouble 10 or 12 weeks ago, and now it's doing okay. So, you know, it's all these businesses are making very tough decisions on how they're operating during this time.
Are you ready, Rosemary?
Yeah, I'm ready. I don't think I want the companies to be using this money for like a low interest or no interest business development fund. It's supposed to be for employment, and it isn't. So I don't find this new development really encouraging. It's like, oh, great, we'll give them more, but people are still going to be out of work. And it also, don't forget the oversight stuff that Trump is doing on his agencies. He already had declared in a signing a declaration that he was not going to let anybody look at where money was going and how it was being used. So kudos to the journalists who have like been tracking this, the Ruth Chris and the Harvard universities of the country who have been taking this money and using it for purposes not fully intended by Congress. There's a tremendous potential for abuse here because there's so much money. It was put together really quickly and in a complicated, never before giveaway, a bailout under the circumstances which are warranted. But look at the potential for abuse there.
Alan?
I agree with what Rosemary just said. I was going to say that, but she said it. So now I don't have to say it. Thank
you.
All
right. Excellent. Let's see. We have about 3 minutes left. And so just a couple of things we learned just this morning. John Ratcliffe, Trump's pick for top intelligence post, has cleared the Senate Intelligence Committee, a vote along party lines, 8-7 in favor of Ratcliffe as the next director of National Intelligence, following an extraordinary hearing earlier this month held under social distancing guidelines. Ratcliffe sat far back from mass senators who questioned him on his credentials and whether he was capable of acting independently of his political allegiance to the President of the United States.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We've seen that.
The committee vote was held behind closed doors in a secure facility in the Capitol. Ratcliffe is expected to be confirmed by the full Senate in a vote likely to be held after Memorial Day, according to congressional aides.
I think I've asked this question before, Joe, but how does he spell his name? Is it R-A-D or R-A-T?
R-A-T.
Oh, okay.
T as in Thomas. Rat. We'll just let that hang in the air for a second.
You ate the cheese and
yeah,
the rat.
Yeah, very good. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the one thing that, you know, he's been through a few national security directors, and they get in there, and then they see from the intelligence community all the data, and then they say something that offends Trump, and get somebody else in there. So
Ratcliffe has never said anything that offended Trump.
What'd you say, Rosemary?
I'm sorry. I said Radcliffe has never said anything that offended Trump.
He has not.
But now
he's in the job, and it'll be interesting. He'll either be a sycophant and just echo whatever Trump wants, which I think that's what Trump wants, or he'll try to do the job the right way. And once he's confronted with the facts and the overwhelming intelligence data that comes in that he gets to see, he may not be that way. And I guess you can hope that people get in the job, and even though it was controversial when they got appointed, that they do the right thing. That happens sometimes in government, not all the time, unfortunately, but you hope that it may happen.
Name a time it happened in the Trump administration.
I don't think it happens in the Trump administration very often. But, I mean, even the attorney general, when he recused himself, Jeff Sessions, he did the right thing by recusing himself and ended up having an independent prosecutor or counsel look at the whole Russian thing. That was a proper thing. And, of course, he paid for it dearly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last up is a letter from Mary, who is a engineer, and she says, "Hi, team. Holman Engineering here. The blow dryers work by intake of room air, then blasting it back out and down like an HVAC system. Both systems have been found to recirculate ambient microbial room air. So personally, it's air dry by shaking off hands or paper towels for me as a biologist mechanical engineering team. There is one air dry system that recently upgraded itself to be able to kill the virus, but that is new and not in most locations, though I recommended it be installed." And that from Mary the engineer. So that takes us to the end of our time together. A reminder, actually, it's not a reminder. I'm telling you for the first time, but the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, will be speaking at noon today, not at 11:30, but at noon today. So we'll be bringing that to you at noon. Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, JP Miller, and of course, Alan Chartok. Thank you all. Be
thank
well,
you,
and we will be back right after this.